This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Resource Centre. I'm Maya Tan. Research shows that too many companies still view themselves as too small a target for cyber risks. However, cyber risks occur at different levels of organisation and involves malicious and non-malicious acts ranging from deliberate hacking attacks to junior employees making simple IT mistakes. Jason Kelly, Vice President of AIG's Head of Asia-Pacific Financial Lines, is here to tell us why many companies remain complacent when it comes to the threat of cyber exposure. My first question is, what are some of the common myths or misconceptions when it comes to cyber risks that organizations have?
Well, thank you, Maya, for the question, and thank you for having me. There are many misconceptions, and I think probably the most prevalent one is around size. And companies or senior individuals within companies thinking that because my company is small, I don't have the same type of exposure as a larger corporation. And, you know, the data would suggest that that's not necessarily true. So if you're holding personal and sensitive information, you know, regardless of your size, large or small, you're certainly going to be a target for malicious acts.
So what do cyber attackers want when they break into your system?
Well, it really depends. They have an agenda, and they've become more professional over time. These typically aren't single individuals looking to steal information so much as they are gangs. So it could be personal information around things like social security cards. It could be health records. It could be credit card information. All of these things have value and can be sold onto the black market.
Thinking about the repercussions, apart from scandalous scenarios such as with Sony Pictures, what's the reality of the damage that these cyber attackers can cause?
I mean, damage can mean a lot of different things. So one, of course, it could be financial damage, either in the cost of litigation or the cost to repair the network, and also, of course, the cost to your brand or reputation. These can be hundreds of millions of dollars or even billions of dollars. And, you know, Target would be one good example of an attack that caused, you know, from a market cap loss, $10 billion plus of damage.
Recently at an event in New York entitled Hacked, the Implications of a Cyber Breach, news surfaced that although most of the cyber breaches that make the headlines are from large national companies, about 62% of breaches occur with small-medium companies. Why do you think this happens?
Well, I think, first of all, it comes down to resource and also expectations. If you're a small to mid-sized enterprise, you may not have the same resources that, say, a J.P. Morgan might have. And from an expectation standpoint, you might expect that a larger corporation like a Target or a Home Depot or a J.P. Morgan might be more inclined to have an attack than a smaller mid-sized enterprise. So I think when it comes to breaches, keep in mind that these aren't always malicious. They could be non-malicious. It could be as simple as someone leaving a laptop on the train, you know, or it could be actually having your email system infiltrated. But I think it really comes down to resources, the availability of resources, and also expectations.
And would it be also a more lax approach when it comes to the SMEs thinking about protecting their IT systems, for example?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, if you look at insurance over time, and not just cyber liability, but all types of insurance, a lot of people would think to not purchase something until they've actually had an accident. Now, today in 2015, everyone has auto insurance, everybody has homeowner's insurance, property insurance. You wouldn't think of not having those things, but it really wasn't that long ago that everybody and every corporation didn't purchase those things. I think cyber liability is probably at a stage now where as people get exposed to the issues, as they incur liability, as they're confronted by regulators, they're starting to understand that they absolutely have to have this type of insurance.
At the same time, these attacks could occur from just junior employees making simple IT mistakes. What sort of mistakes are these, and what sort of measures can be taken in terms of security to prevent those from happening?
Well, I mean, there really isn't any silver bullet out there to make sure that you can't be hacked or that you don't have a breach. And you know, I think training is often something that's overlooked. It's not necessarily about how much money you spend on your hardware or your software or your network overall. It's also training your staff. And for employees that are working in the IT department and they use password as their password and they leave tape notes on their monitor, you know, these are types of security lapses that make it really easy for malicious parties, whether they're company employees that are disgruntled in their job, you know, or they're third parties looking to, you know, cause damage and financially benefit from it. I think a lot more emphasis needs to be focused on the training of staff.
Apart from training, there was a piece of research by Accenture this year, which also showed that only about 50% of companies go through a regular cyber risk audit. Tell me about these audits and what they help to uncover.
Well, there's a risk assessment that's done, and what you're really looking for are vulnerabilities and also, you know, your business continuity plan. So, you know, if your network was to shut down, if you were subject to extortion and you wanted to get your network back, if there was even a data breach and it occurred in a faraway subsidiary, what are the crisis management plans that you have in place? How do you protect your reputation or your brand? How do you communicate the issues to your customers, to your employees, and also importantly, to the regulator? There's a whole host of things that goes down hundreds and hundreds of checkpoints. And having 50% of companies doing an assessment is certainly moving in the right direction, but I would envision a time in the near future where this will be 100% of companies doing this, and perhaps even on a biannual basis.
Perhaps you could help us identify vulnerabilities and some examples of how a company could be vulnerable.
Sure. Well, think of cyber as an issue that's cross-border. It's not just a domestic issue. And you could be a multinational company with offices all across the globe and have a back-office operation, let's say in Kuala Lumpur, for example, and employees there receiving spear phishing emails that come through and not having appropriate training in place and having one or more individuals click onto one of those emails, open it up, and infect the entire network, you know, from that one simple act. It's these types of vulnerabilities that need to be identified. There's also things, of course, within hardware or software, but it's going through every facet of the organization where employees are connected to the Internet and where your business is connected to the Internet and making sure that you separate important information from less important information. You don't necessarily have to have the same security protocols on all of your data, just your sensitive data.
Okay. And this also surfaced in the Accenture research. It states that only 38% of executives that they surveyed said that their companies had thoroughly documented the relationships between their technology and operational assets to identify resilience, risks, and dependencies. What does that mean?
Well, it's certainly a lot of words and it sounds technical, but I think in layman's terms what they're saying is there are certain parts of the business, operations for example, that may be fundamental in helping the business do the things that it's supposed to do, but it's connected to IT, and it's IT that opens up the vulnerability and connects everything else. And so if operations has sensitive information and IT isn't protecting those vulnerabilities, then you're exposing yourself to a whole bunch of issues.
And also it's important to sort of document what goes on, sort of keep a log, so to speak. Is that right?
It is important. I would say it's especially important when it comes to the regulator. So, you know, when you do have a breach, and that's pretty much inevitable these days, you need to be able to demonstrate to the regulator that you do have controls in place and that they are documented. And, you know, when they do show up on your doorstep, you can say, look, these are the protocols or the policies we have in place. And by having those ready, it will make your relationship with the regulator a lot better.
And does it also affect your claim when it comes to insurance?
Well, it certainly would impact our underwriting process. A claim can fall under a cyber policy in many different ways. Initially, before we can have a claim, we have to have a policy. And before we have a policy, we have to do the underwriting. So if a company can demonstrate to us some clear protocols that they have in place, including the documentation of their processes, that certainly helps.
I'm speaking to Jason Kelly, Vice President of AIG's Head of Asia-Pacific Financial Lines. We're talking about cyber risks. When we come back, we'll talk about managing these risks and how to safeguard your company on Resource Center, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Maya Tan for Resource Center. Jason Kelly, Vice President of AIG's Head of Asia-Pacific Financial Lines, is here today. We're talking about cyber risks. Now, we've talked a little bit about risk assessments and audits and how to get the right documentation going and regulators. How can organizations look at managing and mitigating risks?
That's a great question, Maya. There are many different ways to go about it. I would first start internally in making sure that you have sufficiently trained all of your staff, and that includes staff globally, not just in home office, but in all far-flung locations. The second thing is not to be afraid to invest in technology, continuously updating new technology, both hardware and software. And the third thing would be to make sure you understand what are the regulations in your country or the countries that you operate in. Data privacy laws are continuously updating. The regulators are becoming much more active in this issue. They want to make sure that sensitive information is being protected. And by following the rules and regulations, that may actually help you with your own risk assessment.
Are there any major issues occurring in the industry at the moment when it comes to regulations that people are not aware of?
I think one of the things that's surprising to me is how rapidly the data privacy laws are evolving in Asia Pacific. Data privacy laws have been in place in the United States for a very long time, and in fact, we've been writing a type of cyber liability insurance in the United States since 1999. But we only brought the cyber liability policy here to Asia Pacific in 2012, and specifically Malaysia in 2013. And if you think about countries that have had active data privacy laws over the last 10 or 15 years, Japan was one of the first in 2003. Korea came into effect in 2011, and Hong Kong only started having really strong data privacy laws in 2012. And if we were to fast forward 3 or 4 years from now, I'm sure we'll see a host of other Asian countries with much more vigorous data privacy laws in place.
And are the laws adequately protecting organizations?
From a standpoint of protecting other organizations, I think the laws are predominantly more focused on the customer or the consumer, so much as it is the organization. I think the laws are more focused on making sure corporations are complying with the rules, that they're safeguarding data, keeping it onshore where needed, and that they've got real security protocols in place to do their best to prevent a breach.
Well, let's talk about insurance. How can insurance mitigate some of the cyber risks?
Well, a cyber policy does a few different things. It's really focused on first-party and third-party liability. Third-party liability component is really helpful. It's really balance sheet protection in the event of some type of class action litigation against the organization. And that's been a key selling point of the product in the United States and in Europe. But in Asia Pacific, where we have a lot less geographies that have consumer class action law, it's really more about the first-party cover that's involved. You know, whether that's the policy interacting with the regulators in the event of an investigation against either the senior management team or the corporation itself, the fines or penalties as a result of the investigation from a regulator, the crisis management or the reputational risk that's there, extortion cover. There's really a whole host of things that are there. And there's more recent features that have come into the cyber liability market, such as the recreation of data, forensic analysis, a lot of value-added services to really help corporations in the event they have a cyber or a data breach.
So there are two components here that we're looking at. The organization's liability in case there's a breach, and that's then between the regulator, the organization, and the consumer. And then there's also business continuity that we're looking at when it comes to insurance. So how does insurance cover an organization?
Well, if it was the third-party liability, it would be picking up the liabilities of the organization or the individuals named in those lawsuits in relation to that data breach. It's more around network interruption, so your network were to shut down. That's more of a first-party type of liability. And so the insurance industry would look at how long you were down for. It's something we call a waiting time period. And then we would do an analysis of the amount of revenues lost over time. So those are just two examples of how the policy could impact an insured that had a data breach or a network interruption.
What are the limitations to insurance?
There are many, of course. Insurance isn't the only solution to protect against cyber liability. I think first and foremost, it's important that the companies understand what the data privacy rules are in their country or the countries they operate in. They have to understand the legal liability. Do you have consumer class action law, for example? And also understand what type of information you're holding. If you're holding credit card information for millions of customers, you're a much more attractive target to malicious third parties than you would be if you're a restaurant in downtown Kuala Lumpur. So understanding your geography, the data privacy rules, and the type of data you hold is really important.
So how would you advise organizations to get the best out of their cyber policies?
Well, we would recommend that you use an insurance broker, someone who's an expert in this line of business. You want to have a broker that's familiar with the local legislation and the rules, and also someone who's familiar with the product. The product continues to evolve very quickly. The policy we used to write in 1999 is very different from the one we have today in 2015. And I would only expect that both AIG and other insurance companies offering cyber liability policies will continue to innovate for the foreseeable future.
And of course, there's a whole list of conditions that you have to fulfill before AIG, for example, would even underwrite a cyber policy. Is that right?
That's right. We would ask for a proposal form. So that would be the underwriting information related to, you know, what type of business the company is, what type of information do they hold, where are their locations across the globe, how many employees do you have, what type of training do you provide them, these types of questions. And once we've received a proposal form, that gives us the ability then to give out some type of indication in terms of limit profile, deductibles, and also premium.
And do you also look at what sort of preventative measures they've put in place in terms of IT?
Absolutely. Look, as an insurance company, the last thing we want to do is pay out a claim if we don't have to. Insurance is meant to be a payment made on a promise. But of course, if we can insure the best risk, that allows us to have really competitive rates.
What are the instances where companies cannot make a claim?
Sure. Well, every claim situation, Maya, is very unique. No two claims are exactly the same. Probably the most standard issue within the insurance industry would be issues around non-disclosure. So failing to share some type of information that was relevant to the risk, that would be the first thing that comes to mind. But our goal here is to provide a great product that's as broad as possible. We want to pay claims where they should be paid and pay them as quickly as we can and provide a service to our customer. We want to get them back up on their feet as quickly as possible.
And do you help with recovery as well? Insurance may help with business continuity. They may sort of float you with enough cash to do what you need to do in the interim. But what should recovery plans include, and does insurance help with that?
Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, one of the things that comes to recovery is actually the recreation of data. You may be an organization that could have some corporate information that's incredibly important to your business. We have access to third-party professionals, experts in the IT field, that can help with the recreation of data to get a company back up on their feet, and that's something that would be covered under the cyber policy. I would say, from an expectation of cyber liability insurance and how quickly it's growing, you know, the data that we have internally tells us that the entire cyber liability market, the total gross written premium in 2005 was about $120 million. In 2015, our projection is that market will be about $1.6 billion. And by 2025, we expect that to be in excess of $10 billion. Now, those expectations are actually coming on actual buyers. And as individuals, boards of directors, corporations become aware of the liability that they have, they're really moving quickly to pick up a cyber liability policy. And I think we're going to find that in the very near future, purchasing a cyber liability policy will be as commonplace as buying a property policy.
Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for your time, Maya. Thank you for having me.
Jason Kelly, Vice President of AIG's Head of Asia Pacific Financial Lines. This has been Resource Center. I'm Maya Tan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.